Hello, Internet. Welcome to episode 101 of the Assorted Calibers podcast, the Second Amendment podcast that is a little bit for everyone. I'm Weirdbeard, and with me, as always, is my very particular hostess, Aaron Paulette. How you doing, Aaron? You're actually not that particular, but I was joking about how my mom, my wife, and my daughter are all very particular women.
Well, no, I don't think you're wrong. I think I am very particular in a lot of things. I'm just particular about odd things. And a lot of things that most women would be particular about, I don't care.
I like opinionated people. Let me just stand for something.
Well, I'm glad you feel that way.
And one of the things we stand for is we announced this as episode 101, not 101. And I got to say, I like that because, number one, it sounds like it's an introductory college course or my favorite type of bourbon.
So how am I doing? Well, I am glad that something that has been going on for over 2 months is finally finished. Yeah, yesterday, I had the drawing for what started out as our March Madness raffle and rapidly evolved into quarantine madness. Who knows when this will end? And I admit that I stretched it out. And one of the reasons I stretched it out was, well, I launched it at the beginning of the March. And mid-March, we had the COVID stuff. And people were very concerned about what their future was going to be. And I didn't feel right saying, you know what? You're off work. You're on unemployment. You may never work again. You know what you should do? You should give us money. That just felt wrong. And then when the stimulus checks came in, hey, you just got money from the government. Give it to us. And I didn't want to do that. On the other hand, I know that there were a lot of people who were doing quite well. And I know that there were some people who literally took that stimulus check and used it to buy a gun. And so it was like, you know, we should just extend it to give people the option. And there was some thought about when we should let it go. And we figured we'd let it run through the quarantine because, well, hey, people no longer had basketball. They could pay attention to the raffle, maybe. And that rapidly got eclipsed by all the news. And so we just decided, you know what, we'll have it run right up to Mother's Day because we've got some really cool things and maybe you'll win something for your mom. And so I announced the winners. And there were a lot of people who won some really, really nice things.
Such as?
Well, I was leaving that open for you to get into, but all right, if you want me to do it.
I
want to
play dumb. Why not?
So when I did the drawing, I decided that I was going to record it because, well, as some people will tell you, I worry a bit much. And I figured if I just did the drawing and announced who the winners were, and if any of them were my friends, there could be accusations of favoritism. Because a lot of my friends donated. Because they're my friends and I can nag them. And I can say, you should give money to my organization and maybe get stuff. And they go, yeah, okay, sure. I downloaded a free program. And this program was titled OBS. So I had to use it.
Oh, that's crazy. What's their stand?
Open Broadcaster Software. And so it is a complete audio and visual recording, and you can record your screen if you're like doing Twitch. You can record yourself with the webcam. You can do all sorts of things. It's absolutely free to download, and hey, OBS. So I had to try it, and it worked great, and it was very easy to do. And so I had the screen share set up, and on one side, I had the list of participants. You know, each ticket had an entry, so if you bought five tickets, you had five entries, and they watched me randomize it. And on the other side of the screen, I went to random.org that created random numbers, and they saw me generate the random numbers, you know, and I'm talking all the while. And so I picked them, and, well, Superfan Xander won quite a bit of good things. The biggest thing he won was he won the Dark Angel medical class.
Nice.
Oddball won a large amount because, again, he bought a lot of tickets. And so he won plenty of goodies. nothing really extraordinary. It was mostly in the $2 and $3 range. But the one that made me absolutely, almost hysterically glad that I had been recording it was when we did the raffle for Tatiana Whitlock's class and you won. And I just had that moment of, oh, thank God it's all here and they saw what happened. Because, you know, my buddy and my podcaster, and he happens to get the one class he really wants. Yeah, that looks kind of fishy.
Yeah, I mean, that is good stuff. I thought about that when Heinrich won the rifle lower, or the pistol lower at for our giveaway. It was one of those like, oh man, like my good buddy who not only builds guns but also does videos about building guns. Like, it is literally the perfect person to win that. This smells like shenanigans. It was not. And I used actually the bot on the NatHack IRC channel to generate the random numbers. Because I'm that kind of a geek.
And so when I saw this, I thought you would respond right away, but you didn't. Because I made the announcement at 7 o'clock, 7:30 on Sunday, and I know that you're an old man who likes to go to bed early, but you don't normally go to bed until, I don't know, 10 or 11, and you didn't say anything. And I figured, okay, well, something came up. Oh, no, that's right. It's Sunday. You're recording Handgun Radio with Ryan Machad, and then you're going to go to bed. So you haven't seen this. And I wanted to tell you the good news because I wanted to have that Publisher's Clearinghouse moment where I go, weird, you've just won a class with Tatiana Whitlock, and you scream and pee your pants and everything's awesome. And, you know, I'm a night owl and you get up early. And so it's like, you know what? It's like 3:30 right now. Weird usually gets up at 4. I'll just stay up. And I set up all the podcasting gear and I had Discord open and I had Gmail open. And I knew that if you popped on one of them, I would see you and it would be, weird, quick, get on the channel. And you didn't. And 4 o'clock... 4:15. At 4:30, I just went, I can't stay up any longer. I'm so tired. I have to go to bed. And then I figured you would see it and grumble, grumble. And then I went to bed. I got up. I had lunch. You're still not on. I have seen no activity from you. I'm going, what the heck is going on? And then finally, at like, what was it? 1:45 in the afternoon, I finally see you. And it's like, have you heard the news? What news? About the raffle. It's like, okay, well, fine. We'll get on. And we'll record this. And we actually have a recording of the conversation. Hey, Weird, you there?
I am here.
Okay. I want you to know that I stayed up really, really late so I could tell you first thing in the morning, and you didn't get online. I finally went to bed at like 4:30 in the morning, and you still weren't up. So I'm a little bit cranky.
Sorry. I don't, especially while I was up recording Handgun Radio, too, so I actually slept until 5:30, and then it's cooking breakfast and doing laundry and running around and
crappy
morning, honestly, but that's besides the point.
How dare you inconvenience me by not getting up at your regular time?
I don't have a regular time.
You're almost always up at 4 in the morning.
Yeah, sometimes.
Okay, so, I mean, I wanted to record your reaction, and I'm recording even if you aren't.
I am, just in case there's shenanigans.
Well, we've already shenanigized. So I had wanted to tell you this morning, and I hope you haven't been spoiled. But I want to tell you that not only a winner is you, but you won the big prize you wanted. Main boy is going to class with main girl, Tatiana Whitlock.
Yes! Was hoping. That is awesome. That is so awesome. It'll be great once I'm allowed to enter the state of Maine.
There was such a long delay, I wondered what had happened.
Well, Discord's being a dickhead right now too.
Okay,
so
all right.
You might have missed some of it. I can upload my side too. Yeah.
So the good news here, I mean, well, other than you winning, of course, is
and not having cancer.
Yes, you. These prizes, I mean, I'm not sure if they're gift cards or codes or whatever, but they're vouchers for the classes, right? And they mm-hmm. are good for a minimum of a year.
Awesome.
So it's not like you have to do it now.
Uh-huh.
And that was something that I specifically brought up with the person who helped me facilitate these prizes, name withheld at his request. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, what with the COVID going on, how long are these good for? And he guaranteed me that they were good for at least a year.
Awesome.
So, you know, I figure if we don't have things worked out in a year's time, the country has much bigger problems. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you and I have more things to worry about than going
we'll
to
be
a
getting
class.
Different shooting practice in.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully that's not the case, but yeah.
Oh, so,
you know, one of the nice things about the codes is that, you know, it's not like you have to make this specific date or you're screwed. I mean, you do have to work around her schedule, but you've got time. And so
awesome.
I look forward to you working things out with her. And I'm pretty sure you have her contact info because you met her at NRA last year, a couple of years ago, something like that. But yeah, but just in case, I can put you in touch with her so you can coordinate.
Yeah, either way, if I don't have her card or email offhand, I will reach out to you. I think we're Facebook buddies too, but not sure.
Okay, awesome. Cool. So there you go. Maybe that will make your it's afternoon now, but maybe that'll make your day a little bit better.
It did.
Okay, good.
You were worried that I was all spoiled for this, though.
Well, yeah, because Oddball was talking about it in the Discord channel. He was literally grumbling about how you won the prize he wanted, and he guesses he'll have to just pay to attend Tatiana Whitlock, and it's like, well, damn, now he's gonna see. I don't know how you missed it.
Well, it's because you told me not to read the chat, and I didn't look at it, but I will say that you, number one, you mentioned the raffle, but didn't say anything specific about it. And I joked about how if your doctor's office calls you and leaves a message and just tells you to call back and doesn't tell you what it's about, you're probably going to get bad news. If someone calls you and says it's about the raffle, they're probably calling for good news. And I know that I put a couple of tickets in one bucket and a couple of tickets in the other bucket. And I said, just put all the rest on Tatiana. And you just went, oh, okay. I wanted to load the deck.
It wasn't quite make it rain, but it was pretty close.
It was pretty close. And I won't lie. I didn't read close enough when we were donating to that jerk who was making all sorts of transphobic remarks. I didn't really read that I was going to get any coupons on it. I really just wanted to piss him off when I donated my money. And so suddenly you got a whole bunch of raffle tickets. Oh, well, I hadn't thought about that. What do I want? Let's see. Drum magazines. Can't get them. Though when you said, what's the news? I thought, oh, did the news come in? Did Warman v. Healy is getting heard by the Supreme Court? Maybe I can get a drum magazine. But yeah, so I just went, wait, Tatiana, her home base is in Gray, Maine. Like, that is an easy drive from my parents' house. And it's actually not too far from where Ryan Machad lives. And I'm just like, ooh, I can make this work. And so I said, yep, nope, put it all on that.
You should see if you can get Ryan to attend the same class.
I mean, totally doing that.
And then you could probably get Tatiana to be interviewed by you for both of our podcasts.
I like the way you think, Aaron.
Yeah.
You hear that, Tatiana? We're coming for you.
That doesn't sound creepy at all.
I mean, come on. You can't creep on Tatiana. She can kill you so many ways. She's such a tough lady. It's such a compact package. It's hilarious.
So, brief segue that will absolutely make sense in a moment. Did you ever in the 90s watch the Highlander TV series?
Oh, bits and pieces, but nothing a whole lot.
Okay. This may not mean anything to you, but if you are a fan of the show or if you want to do a Google dive, Tatiana Whitlock reminds me so much of the character Amanda from Highlander, played by Elizabeth Ward Grayson. Now, admittedly, not so much Amanda after she got her own series and she went blonde for some terrible reason, but before that, when she's got the black pixie cut, and there's a similarity there, and to me that's a compliment. It's like, yes, you are both lithe and graceful and deadly.
Oh man, I just found a picture of her with the pixie cut and the dark hair. I mean, honestly speaking, the one with the blonde hair on the page, it looks like Tatiana with a dye job. Like it's like. It is a striking result.
Mm-hmm.
So no, you're not even remotely wrong. Like if you had sent me a picture of that of going like the, oh yeah, Tatiana, she goes to Ren Fairs too. And I'd be like, no crap.
So yeah, I don't know why I brought it up, but I wanted to bring it up just cause she's awesome. And I liked that show in the 90s, though it doesn't really hold up that well now.
I was amused by, I was on a fishing boat where literally there was a dude that was like comic book guy, but on a fishing boat, which was really strange on the fact that that is the last place you expect to find a comic book guy type character. And,
yeah.
And he had an entire one of those CD albums filled with X-Files and Highlander DVDs. One of the common things you'll have on fishing boat is you'll just literally just put a movie in and just let it play. And so, like, I watched the Starsky and Hutch movie for the first time entirely out of order. I'd, like, walk into the galley and be one part of the movie and then watch for a little while. Then I'd have to go out and deck and go count fish and then come back in and it's in a completely different spot and watch that. But eventually they'd start lining up and so you're recreating it in your head. And eventually, yeah, I've seen the whole movie. But I watched the beginning last, and then I watched the middle a few times, and then, like, I saw this scene, like, six times. And then, but, yeah, he at one point, he did have the I think it was several episodes where Robert Maul, the guy who plays Bull from Night Court, was in there, and I found that to be deeply amusing.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since he was... I mean, Bull is such a just soft-spoken, introverted character, and this guy was just over the top and chewing the scenery.
Yeah, Slan, I think his name was. He was the bad guy in the first, maybe the first two episodes.
Okay, yeah.
And yeah, Bull was just, you know, straightforward and kind of dim and just, whereas Slan... Oh, you could not get him to stop talking. Yes, I'm Slan, sometimes known as Slan the Cat, and blah, blah, blah. He watched me monologue, and it's like, wow, really? Huh?
And I just love seeing, like, an actor playing somebody who's totally the opposite of who they played before, because it's one of those, you're an actor. It shows that you're rangy. Well, shifting gears, you're talking about stuff coming to an end, and I mentioned... Warman versus Healy as being potentially viewed by the Supreme Court. Kind of a rough segue into it, but we actually had a positive Massachusetts Supreme Court ruling.
The hell you say? What happened?
I know, you could have knocked me over with a feather, but when this whole quarantine shelter in place, whatever the heck you want to call this nonsense, started going through, one of the orders from the governor's office, actually it started from Mara Healy. She was the start of it, and then the governor backed her up on it. Was that gun shops and gun ranges should be closed because they are not essential businesses. And actually, literally, she said that it puts our law enforcement officers in danger to have gun shops open. And a series of gun shop owners, I believe the lead one being the owner of Cape Gunworks, and I believe they're in Hyannis, it's a large... essentially gun club and with a shop attached to it. And they led a lawsuit against Mara Healey and the government of Massachusetts, saying literally it was on Second Amendment grounds, which I would note, I said Borman versus Healey, which said, yeah, the owning an AR-15 is not protected by the Second Amendment. So literally they think the Second Amendment means just about nothing. But this judge actually did rule that no, you can't close gun shops because of a pandemic. It's one of those. There's no reason. If there's other businesses that are considered essential that are open, and these are the only way people can get a hold of firearms and ammunition in the state of Massachusetts, maybe they should be legally open. So, yeah. Gun shops are now open in the state of Massachusetts. I haven't gotten an email from my club yet to hear if they're open or not. And also at the same time with the way ammo's going, I kind of don't know if I want to go to the club. It might be fun, but I hate shooting ammo that I don't know if I'm going to be able to find replacements for.
One thing that I thought was very surprising. So the gun shops were closed, but gun manufacturers were listed as essential businesses. And I looked that up, and I was shocked to discover just how many firearms manufacturers there are in a state that is hostile to guns. Mm-hmm. I don't understand this, but just looking at a quick Google thing, Car Arms, Savage Arms, Smith & Wesson, I think Springfield is here. I'm not seeing it.
No, that's the Springfield Armory is in Springfield, Massachusetts. Springfield Armory that makes the XD pistols and the M1A rifles is in Illinois.
Ah, my bad. And then, of course, there are a bunch of other things which you may not have heard of, like Patriot Arms, Present Arms, things like that. But I was just shocked at how many that are there in a state that is hostile to them, and why.
It's history. It's the fact that, Smith, I don't know exactly the story behind Carr, because they're a relatively new. They got their start in the 90s. And Justin Moon, the owner of Carr Arms, he grew up in New York. So it might just have been an opportunity of finding manufacturing that was close to where he was. But a lot of them, Smith & Wesson has been around since the 1800s. And then also when you look at even going further and going back to just the Northeast, which all places where, is very, very hostile to gun owners. Like, you've got Henry Rifle is in New York and has always been in New York. I think they're actually right in the city too. You've got Colt is in Hartford, Connecticut. I'm trying to think of some of the other ones that are in that, but essentially huge numbers of gun companies had been throughout there. Harriet Richardson was in Massachusetts. They're no longer around. Dan Wesson was also in Massachusetts. There's a bunch of gun makers in there, but a lot of it is historical. There aren't a lot of newer gun manufacturers popping up in Massachusetts. But yeah, that was actually one of the questions Jay Grazio actually told me. He asked Smith & Wesson when he was taking a tour of them, was like, why are you guys still here? And they're just like, we've got people that have been working at Smith & Wesson for three generations. Their grandfather started working at Smith & Wesson, and then their dad went and started working at Smith & Wesson, and they started working at Smith & Wesson. We're not just going to uproot everybody. And also, they've got a huge amount of pull within the state. Let's just say I'm very limited in the number of handguns I can buy. I'm not limited in the number of Smith & Wesson handguns I can buy.
Ah, okay. That makes a certain amount of sense. I mean, I don't know if you've heard, but there's something similar that was going on with Elon Musk and Tesla. Mm-hmm. And he had a manufacturing plant in, I think, Fremont, California, and other companies were opening. And even though he felt that his company had met all the guidelines, he was specifically told, no, he couldn't open. And there may have been an exchange of profanities over Twitter with state level governments. I'm not entirely sure. And after I don't know how many of those, Musk just went, all right, fine, we're pulling out of California. Mm-hmm. We'll keep the Fremont plant on a limited basis. And apparently he's going to reopen it today, tomorrow, something like that, just regardless, yep, because people need work. But yeah, he's basically said, okay, I'm done with California. I'm going to move as much of my manufacturing out of California as is possible. Say goodbye to all that tax revenue. And I was hoping that gun companies would do that to places like Massachusetts, but
well, they have done that to a lesser extent. I mean, you had what was it? Beretta USA was based out of, I think, Maryland, and they have since moved to South Carolina, and then the PTR was based out of Connecticut, and they have moved to I forget where, but there's been a bunch of companies that have moved and shifted. The big thing is it hasn't been any of the massive ones, and I think that's just because they're just so entrenched.
Okay.
So I got one other interesting news story, and this is actually a very interesting news story. We might go down a little bit of a rabbit hole here. The Mexican president started asking the United States for information on Operation Fast and Furious. I saw this when it was going around. Like you
saw it because I sent you the link.
You sent me the link this morning, some other.
No, I sent no. I sent you two links. The second link that I sent you was the Reuters link. The first one that I sent you was earlier than that, and that was the one in Bloomberg.
Oh yeah, that was you.
Yeah. And so I was shocked not only that it happened, but that Bloomberg was reporting it, of all things.
Yep. And then other people have sent it to me as well. And my first thought was, why are they talking about this now? I mean, it's one of those, like, was President Obama's doing, or at least Eric Holder was held in contempt of Congress for essentially withholding information on what was going on with this. So at least Eric Holder's got dirty hands in this, and come on, do you think he's literally doing stuff all on his own, or is he doing stuff at the behest of the president? But it turns out, like, I hadn't even heard, like, the backstory behind it, that, like, their security minister was arrested with drug trafficking offenses, and he was working with El Chapo Guzman. Like, why wasn't this, like, the news in a made-for-TV movie?
Well, there are theories that the reason this information is coming out now is to help Trump's reelection. So just throwing that out there. I'm not sure that I believe it, but I don't necessarily don't believe it either.
I got to say, as much of a Pollyanna as I am, I do not think that Barack Obama was that incompetent. I do believe he was behind. I'll say right now, I do believe he was behind Fast and Furious. And for those that don't know, I mean, I think you should, but essentially Fast and Furious, well, what we know for sure was that cartel members were given money and safe passage across the border into the United States so that they could go to gun shops and spend that money on semi-automatic weapons, and then were given safe passage back into Mexico for them to go and use those weapons. The overall statement when this was discovered was that it was so that we could, quote unquote, track the weapons so that we could find out where they were going to the cartels, and therefore catch the cartel bad guys when the weapons go their way, or figure out where they're arming up depots or all that. Interesting idea. And again, there was a thing called Operation Wide Receiver that was done under George W. Bush's administration, where they actually, I can't remember if they planted them or how they got the guns in there, but they had rifles with GPS receivers in the stock. And I think there was something like 300 rifles that they ended up putting into the hands of cartel members in Mexico. But then the moment they realized that for whatever reason, the GPS receivers weren't working, or they were losing track of the rifles, they immediately stopped the program. This was, 25,000 guns? It was a huge number.
Oh, gosh, I don't remember that.
Let's just put it this way. I remember, I'd need to look it up, but I remember I actually crunched the numbers for what we knew about how many guns were Fast and Furious guns, and realized that statistic that was being quoted over and over again of the percentage of guns being reported by the Mexican government were traced back to the United States. It was literally all of them was Fast and Furious guns.
Wow.
Like the numbers added up perfectly. I'll try to dig that up. It's in my blog somewhere. I'll try to dig that up in the show notes of where I actually show my data and show the math, where it is literally the number of guns that Mexico was tracing and the number that we're tracing back to the United States. Now note, those are numbers tracing back to the United States that they were reported. There's a huge amount of defectors in Mexico, in the Mexican military, and the Mexican military buys a substantial amount of their arms from the United States. So there's a whole bunch of guns that the Mexican government is getting their hands on when they're raiding cartels that trace back to the United States that they aren't informing the ATF on because it's got property of Mexican government property marks on them. So they already figured that out. But needless to say, this one, there was no real way of how exactly they were going to track the guns once they went into Mexico. And it further got very confusing when the fact that the Mexican government had no earthly idea that this operation was going on. Like, they did not tell the Mexican, they were not working with the federales. So it wasn't even the, oh, when you do a raid of a place and guns, by that point, who cares if you're raiding a place and you're seizing guns? I mean, it's, you already found them. It's, the gun didn't help you get there. And, in several cases, there was Officer Brian Terry. And was there another, United States officer that was killed? Known specifically with a Fast and Furious gun?
You know, I want to say that there is, but I'm drawing a blank and I'm not finding anything at the moment. I do recall, and I think Miguel reported this back in the days of Gunblog Variety Cast, that there was at least one village in Mexico that was wiped out by the cartels, just massacred. And those guns were traced back to Gunwalker.
Yeah.
Well, and so the blood of all of those villagers are also in the hands of whoever perpetuated this mess.
Yeah. I would argue, there is a few American citizens who were killed by Operation Fast and Furious guns. But I was saying that really more as a simple statement of there were hundreds of Mexican citizens killed by Fast and Furious guns. This was a major operation. And I must say, the guys were being given money to get guns. The FBI was specifically making it so that their NICS checks would come back clean, even though these were not legal American citizens or legal aliens. These were illegal aliens and criminals, so they shouldn't pass a background check. But the background check was being passed. And on several occasions, gun shop owners were like, seeing somebody come in speaking broken English, looking like a rough dude, and asking for crates of AKs or crates of AR-15s and like paying cash. And the background check was coming back clean and they were calling the ATF and going, what is going on? And literally the ATF was saying, let them go, let them purchase the guns. If you do not do this, if you hinder this in any way, we will revoke your license. And so I've got to say, the only thing that makes sense to me on why this huge boondoggle was going on was literally, as I said, we were getting all this information that guns were coming, you know, being traced by the Mexican government back to the United States. And essentially the argument was we need to do something about this. And I could only see it as an end run around Heller versus DC and McDonald versus the city of Chicago in the, you can't ban weapons of common use under the Second Amendment. But what if it's in international relations? That would be something that would be questionable. And I could, that's all I was seeing was a way for the Obama administration to ban assault weapons, which is something they had promised in their campaign from the very get-go. So
explain to me how you think that would work.
I can't do that. I just see it as that was what I was hearing, is the, we need to limit the ability for guns to travel across the border. And
okay,
essentially they just wanted to limit the sale of quote unquote military assault weapons.
Okay.
But I gotta say, as much of a Pollyanna as I am, I would be absolutely amazed if every last ounce of documentation of this is not completely destroyed. What do you think, Aaron? Do you think anything's going to come up of this?
Well, I mean, things might come up, but they aren't going to find a smoking gun. I will be very surprised if that happens. I think this is the sort of thing that we're going to need to wait another 20 to 40 years, and someone will have a deathbed confession somehow. Yeah. And, it will be, I've got to get this off my chest before I die. And, you know, here are the documents that I squirreled away. And so now finally the truth can be known.
Yeah, I didn't know if we're going to be that lucky.
So on that depressing note, let's try and turn the ship around a little bit. We all know about the bolt-action Springfield 1906 rifle, but have you heard about the semi-automatic Winchester 1907? David is here to tell you about the curious features and fascinating history of this little-known rifle.
Hi, and welcome to Gun Lovers and Other Strangers. The turn of the 20th century was an exciting time for firearm designers. Rimfire and centerfire metallic cartridges had become standard and accepted. Smokeless powder was starting to displace black powder in many applications, and manufacturing and materials technologies were improving at a rapid pace. This led to various ideas for practical semi-automatic firearms. In 1906, Winchester was refining one of these ideas for market. The Model 1907 rifle was based on U.S. patent number 681481 and was assigned to Winchester by T.C. Johnson, one of their key designers. Based on their earlier rimfire Model 1903 and low-powered centerfire Model 1905 rifles, the Model 1907 is a takedown semi-automatic magazine-fed straight blowback rifle. The Model 1907 was chambered for the .351 Winchester self-loading cartridge, which launched a 180-grain bullet at around 1,900 feet per second, producing just over 1,400 foot-pounds of energy, not much shy of the .30-30 Winchester centerfire or .35 Remington power levels. The Model 1907 came with a single-stack 5-round detachable magazine, but 10- and 15-round magazines were available as well. One of the more unusual features of the Model 1907 is the charging handle, which extends out the front of the forend. In order to chamber a round, this extension is pulled straight back. This unique design element was necessary because Browning still held the patent for side-mounted charging handles as part of their Auto 5 design. The Model 1907 weighed in at around 8 pounds with a 20-inch barrel and had an overall length of 40 inches. In addition to the standard straight stock model, Winchester also offered a deluxe version with checkered pistol grip stock and checkered forend. The U.S. Army Signal Corps Air Service ordered 19 Model 1907 rifles in 1915. This shipment was sent to Columbus, New Mexico, and presumably was used in aircraft attached to General Pershing's punitive expedition into Mexico. During World War I, as the European nations scrambled to expand their militaries, the Model 1907 was purchased in some numbers by our allies. The French ordered 300 Model 1907 rifles in October 1915, followed by an additional order for 2,200 more. The rifles ordered by France were modified to fire fully automatic at around 700 rounds per minute and were fitted with bayonet adapters. These rifles were designated the Winchester Model 1907-17 and used 15 or 20 round magazines. Another way of looking at these Model 1907-17s is as compact, select-fire carbines firing an intermediate cartridge from detachable magazines. Sound familiar? Britain ordered 120 Model 1907 rifles for the Royal Flying Corps. They were primarily intended to arm rear-seat observers. In May of 1916, the Russian government jumped on the bandwagon by purchasing 500 Model 1907 rifles. Following World War I, the Model 1907 became popular with U.S. law enforcement agencies, including the Texas Rangers. This became more prevalent in the 1930s when police upgraded firearms due to the increase in crime. For example, the FBI purchased Model 1907 rifles in response to the 1933 Kansas City massacre. Partly driven by interest from various agencies, in the mid-1930s, Winchester introduced a law enforcement variant. This rifle featured a non-adjustable rear sight, sling swivels, a larger magazine release, and an optional bayonet mount front sight combination that accepted the Krag-Jorgensen bayonet. Later in the 1930s, the forend was made thicker to address a cracking problem that had plagued earlier versions. This model also had a redesigned charging handle, making it easier to lock the bolt back. Produced from 1907 through 1957, over 58,000 model 1907 rifles were made. With an initial list price of $28 in 1907, by its final year of sales, Stoeger listed the model 1907 for $167.25. In comparison, a Winchester Model 70 standard grade sold for $124.45 in the same 1958 edition of the catalog. If you can find a copy, The Forgotten Winchesters, A History of the Models 1905, 1907, and 1910 Self-Loading Rifles by John Henwood is about the only print reference I can find on these classic and interesting rifles. However, CN Arsenal did do an episode on the Model 1907 in French service and another on the later Winchester 1910.
Weird, put David's links in the show notes, or I'll ram you with my wheelchair. The Great Hawking commands you.
That about wraps up this segment. If you have any questions for me or suggestions for future segments or a comment on a past segment, please post them on the Assorted Calibers Podcast Facebook page, and Aaron or Weird will make sure I get them. That's all for now. Thanks for listening. I'm David, and this is Gun Lovers and Other Strangers.
Now, I say little known because I didn't hear of it. That doesn't really mean it's actually little known. For all I know, I'm the idiot in the room and everyone else has heard about it. But I gotta say something. So to me, it was little known. How about you, Weird?
Honestly, I had not heard of that either. I had heard of, in the show notes, there's the... He's got some CN Arsenal videos and they talked about essentially Winchester also made a shotgun on the same lines, and that was competing with the Browning Auto 5. And that one, because it was using a tube magazine, it needed to be cocked by literally grabbing the barrel and pushing the barrel back and locking the bolt in the back position. And Othias points out the fact that that gun was known as the Widowmaker, because often people would put the butt on the ground and push straight down like they're churning butter for it. And sometimes they would forget to hit the bolt lock, and so it would chamber a new round, and that might cause a slam fire, and that might cause that ammo to go into your chin.
Yikes.
But John Browning had patents on amazing amounts of things, such as having your breech facing your gun integral with the slide of a pistol, and evidently having a charging handle on the side of your bolt carrier.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting, but really, really awkward and kludgy. I mean, that is a kind of weapon that if you ever need to run the charging handle, I mean, you could not do it easily in combat because you would have to unshoulder it, set it down. I don't know how difficult that plunger is, but yeah, you would do that plunger, which is right underneath the barrel, and then you'd have to shoulder it again. Mm-hmm. And that just seems awkward to me. Probably why it isn't around right now.
Yeah, and again, it had a standard stock on it, so you couldn't go back. My first thought was, well, what about like the AR-15, where you've got the charging handle in the back of the receiver? Well, no, you couldn't do that because your face is literally right up against the receiver. You'd be popping yourself in the nose with it. But yeah, that was a crazy rifle. And also, I gotta say, for David, because I know he loves me pointing it out, but... he scared the crap out of me listening to that that request for the show notes in the Stephen Hawking electronic voice. I'm so glad I created that monster.
I just don't know how long he can keep doing this, because each time he manages to exceed our expectations. And is he eventually going to plateau? Will the joke eventually get stale? Or is he going to continue just climbing and climbing, and then eventually, you know, he comes up with this just sort of unfathomable four-dimensional joke and we start bleeding from our eyes?
I look forward to that.
I think either one is possible, especially considering all the horrible puns he likes to make during mag dumps. Oy vey.
The anti-gunners are really scared. All these new gun owners are a massive risk to continuing the anti-gun narrative. It seems the strategy the anti-gun lobbyists are going with is to belittle and instill fear in these new gun owners, so maybe they won't head further down the path of being lawfully armed. This Fisk is a former ATF agent, David Chipman, a lobbyist for the Giffords anti-gun group, speaking with the news site Cheddar. Longtime fans of the show might remember the audio Fisk of Giffords senior policy advisor and former ATF agent David Chipman as he spread propaganda and lies about 80% receivers and 3D printers. Well, he's back on the news site Cheddar, and now he's talking about the COVID-19 panic buyers.
When we look at the impact of coronavirus shutdowns nationwide, there are some businesses that are seeing a boom: digital conferencing, grocery stores, and gun sales. According to the FBI, the number of people applying for mandatory background checks shot up more than 40% compared to last year. That is roughly 1 million people.
I mockingly say panic buyers because I really don't think these people are panicking. I think they're suddenly realizing that a gun is a valuable tool. And even more valuable in a time when police are in a diminished role, prisons are letting inmates out early, people are beginning to protest in the streets, and there are shortages of food and life-saving medications. Also, the phrase, applying for mandatory background checks, is about as big a tell for somebody not knowing anything about the issue at hand as I can think of.
Joining us to discuss this morning is David Chipman. He is senior policy advisor at Giffords, Courage to Fight Gun Violence.
As I said in that other Fisk, while Chipman was a former ATF agent and will use that as an appeal to authority, he is speaking right now as a lobbyist for a corporation founded to ban guns and destroy the Second Amendment.
Clearly, hundreds of thousands, if not a million people have purchased a gun above what they did last year. And so that's a good indicator.
And nearly all the numbers and accounts are pointing to the bulk of those purchases being first-time gun buyers. Also, there is no way numbers like that can happen if these new buyers are all boomer white Republicans. Some of these new buyers are likely former supporters of gun control. Former. This is why so many anti-gun groups have been speaking out. This prospect terrifies them. The people who the anti-gun lobby is preaching to are people who are completely ignorant on guns. The people who actually own guns won't be easily scared by blatant lies because they can see the truth with their own eyes.
I think that hopelessness, anxiety, fear, people want to control something. And when you look at the news, people are thinking, wow, perhaps I need a firearm.
People want to control something. I like how he's reducing owning a gun to a pathos like a fidget spinner or an anxious person cleaning their house to feel more in control. No, you jerk. If you are concerned about food shortages or if the police aren't coming when they're called, a gun is a solution to these concerns. Remember, all the gun laws that are pushed by the corporate anti-gun lobby exempt police and private security. Because even the likes of Everytown, Brady, and Giffords all know that guns are useful. They just expect those who can't hire bodyguards should have to wait for the police to show up with those exempted guns. But if you're worried that the police might not be around, then what?
But there are risks to that choice, and that's what I hope to talk about today.
Of course there are. That's why I've been talking about gun safety in public schools. So that when people get that aha moment, we don't have to worry about if they know how to safely handle their new firearm. Of course, this is a shill from an anti-gun lobby, so we'll see how different his advice is.
As an ATF special agent for 25 years, you know, I had to train repeatedly to be proficient with the use of a gun. And most of the new buyers who went out to their gun store and bought a gun have no training whatsoever. And so in their mind, they might be confident. They might think that they're diehard, ready to go, but unfortunately, they're more like Tiger King, and they're putting themselves and their families in danger.
Appeal to authority. I tried to look up what capacity Mr. Chipman served within the ATF, and page after page of Google searching, I mostly found article after article of him lobbying for gun control as a former ATF agent. So as far as Mr. Chipman is concerned, the best thing he ever did for the ATF was leave it. I did manage to find a copy of his resume he submitted to the House of Representatives when he testified before the House as a lobbyist for Giffords, then the Law Center to Prevent Gun Violence and Americans for Responsible Solutions, against the SHARE Act of 2017, which was a massive pro-gun bill that included the removal of suppressors off the National Firearms Act. That being said, he did do some field work with the ATF where he potentially could have faced deadly force scenarios, and that can't be discounted. That being said, as far as I know, he was never in an officer-involved shooting. Meanwhile, if you spend any time reading the NRA Armed Citizen, you'll quickly learn that while training is a very good asset to have, it is an imperative, as most of the people in those articles are essentially completely untrained. Also, when you look at the number of accidental deaths and injuries by firearms, it is a very small number, meaning that people generally know how to safely handle guns. And if they don't, the basics of firearm safety are very accessible. Of course, they are accessible through pro-gun sources. Mr. Chipman can speak all he wants about the importance of training, but after he left the ATF, he began working with Mayors Against Illegal Guns, now Everytown for Gun Safety, a wholly owned subsidiary of Michael Bloomberg, and then on to Giffords, after working as a sales director for the dubious ShotSpotter technology. So his entire career, he has never worked in any capacity as a safety trainer or as someone who has promoted any form of safety training. That's how important he sees training. Hell, in the training field of his resume, there are only a couple of classes that he's taken that could have potentially have live fire training. In nearly 20 years as an ATF agent, most of his training is in management skills. That's his personal priorities. Also, I've never seen Tiger King. And I probably won't. So I have no idea what the reference, but from what I do know about Tiger King, it sounds like an old fart trying to appeal to the youth.
How do you do, fellow kids?
What?
I think it's working.
And so what I would suggest is for those people who were first-time gun owners, if they did go out and buy a gun, I would secure that gun locked and unloaded and hide it behind the cans of tuna and beef jerky that you've stored in a cabinet. And, only bring that out if the zombies start to appear. And I don't think they are.
Wait, what? So he just went on admonishing new gun owners for not being properly trained. And then he follows up with this glib line that is as dangerous as it is idiotic. How does one secure a gun behind the cans of tuna? Maybe via those various cable and trigger locks, which are better than nothing, but are easily defeatable and are completely worthless if improperly installed. And behind the tuna? Like in the pantry? Let me talk about my own expertise. I am a stay-at-home dad and now full-time home educator thanks to the cancellation of the school year in Massachusetts. And before that, my job in high school was as a daycare teacher. In those professional capacities, I learned that you really need to feed small children about every 4 hours, or they turn into cranky little monsters. Breakfast, a few hours later, morning snack, then a few hours later, then lunch, then afternoon snack, then dinner. So you are suggesting you put a live firearm, secured in the most minimal way, in a location that will be the highest traffic for small children? As in the super curious ones that want to touch and handle anything new they see? Why not tuck it in the toy box like ABC News did, and then act all surprised when the kids play with the object they found in their toy box? And then the zombie line. First up, the anti-gunners have totally attacked gun nuts during the zombie craze, which seems to be thankfully over now. Those green tip bullets, the zombie targets, the AR-15s hydro dipped with biohazard symbols, it was all just proof that we were childish and unserious about guns and gun safety. Of course, that was in conjunction with, you know, actually being involved in an industry that fosters training and safety. Giffords and Everytown offer nothing for training. And his line about zombies shows that when given the choice between admitting that the good training is offered by the evil gun industry and the NRA, or just making fun of the noobs, he chooses the latter. Classy.
So I'm much more concerned about these guns being stored safely in the homes now and not unintendedly putting families at risk or the gun buyer themselves at risk.
Yeah, your concern really shows.
Imagine that in homes across the United States, domestic violence is already an issue. I would imagine that people under stress, losing their job, that there's more drinking. You put a gun in the mix, potential that we are seeing is more domestic violence incidents. And now that you put a gun in the middle of a domestic violence incident, the lethality just soars.
I've noted this before. Since there's never been an instance of international social distancing like this, it's really rather difficult to predict how society will react. But we will have numbers when this is all over. Of course, I also must note that he's so deeply concerned about domestic violence, but only when it comes to guns and gun violence.
Police need to be focused on ensuring that our hospitals are safe, that people are being transported to hospitals, that they're keeping safe themselves. They don't need to be responding to more armed domestic violence situations, which are already the most deadly call for police that they can ever go on.
Hey, but if the domestic violence calls don't involve firearms, that's totally okay. We just need to ban the guns. Also, the most dangerous call a police officer can go on is a traffic stop on the highway. The vast majority of officer deaths and injury is from traffic accidents, not officer-involved shootings or anything involving guns.
And we saw just in Phoenix within the last couple of days, a commander was shot and killed during a domestic violence incident.
Not that this has anything to do with the issue at hand, since the killer in question had a lengthy criminal record, so he could not legally own a gun. But just one more law would have helped.
So right now, I understand the fear. I understand the concern. I have it myself. But we don't want to make rash decisions that place ourselves, our neighbors, and our families more at risk than actually keeping them safer.
You understand the fears and concerns. And as a retired ATF agent, you still have personal guns, right? Oh, you just don't want other people to have guns because they aren't properly trained, and that's too dangerous, despite any evidence to support that. Oh, and you don't really want people to get training because that would imply there is a safe way to own and handle a gun. The corporate gun lobby. More abstinence-only education. Those are your anti-gun talking points and a few rebuttals to combat them.
So I have a couple of thoughts on this, and they're related to the ones you made. When he's talking about the cans of, was it tuna and beef jerky, he was taking shots at preppers, too. Yeah. And I thought that was just an extra layer of insult, because here we are, or at least were when that was made, and I got to tell you, the people who were standing in line for hours and hours and who were buying guns, they weren't the preppers, because the preppers already had the guns and the ammo and the toilet paper. Mm-hmm. It was the other ones who were going, oh, crap, I need this. And so taking shots at preppers, it's as tone deaf as, I don't know if you know who Zach Wienersmith is. He's the cartoonist who does Saturday morning breakfast cereal.
Okay.
And he did a very tone-deaf tweet, and fortunately, Twitter tore him apart for it. And he said something, roughly paraphrased, because I cannot be bothered to look it up. It was something like, saying that preppers were right about this is like saying gas mask fetishes were right. You know, in that they're, okay, this is a very small example of where their particular fetish is useful, but it doesn't mean that they're right about things. And it was just, screw you, monkey boy.
Yeah, except for meanwhile, the real people are going, all right, first up, I want some guns, because again, police stopped answering calls and they started releasing prisoners, and they've actually started releasing dangerous prisoners from prisons. And there's been a whole bunch of people that were released under early release under these coronavirus policies who are now back in prison because they didn't last very long before they started misbehaving again. So you've got that. And then also the fact that there is going to be a whole bunch of people that are going to be more like us that are going to say having half a case of toilet paper means I'm out of toilet paper. Quick, buy some. It doesn't matter what the price is. And then also having a freezer full of meat when, hey, guess what? There's massive beef meat shortages, and it's goddamn expensive when you can find it. Isn't it nice to have a freezer full of stuff that you bought when it was still cheap?
Exactly. The other thing that I noticed is, okay, they're talking about how rates of death sometimes climb because of domestic violence. And what I immediately thought of was, you know, a lot of those are defensive uses. So why is it suddenly so horrible that a woman might use a gun to defend her life or the lives of her children against a domestic partner? But that's one of the things he's arguing against. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just like you said, it's all about reducing gun violence, not violence, because, you know, knife violence and hammer violence and rape violence, all that is just good and wholesome and family friendly. It just doesn't involve those evil guns. And I thought that was garbage. And the final thought, hey, we are getting really good mileage about the, you know, the abstinence only gun education, aren't we?
Yes. I mean, I think it's a good thing just to rub their nose in it, because mm-hmm. if they could feel shame, they should be ashamed about it. But I don't think they can. I mean, especially given just the level of lies. And also at the end of the closing, like literally I came up with that bit like as I was just typing the last like, how am I going to close on this? And I realized the dude's a former ATF agent. Like, when have you met a retired cop that doesn't have a bunch of guns, whether that be in Florida or Alabama or any place that's where everyone's got a bunch of guns, or in New York or Massachusetts or mm-hmm. or Chicago?
Plus they have that exemption. Even though they're retired, they can still concealed carry everywhere. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they've got that exemption, and then on top of that, they've got exemptions probably for a lot of different acquisition levels where it's easier for them to get a gun in certain places.
Oh, like in Massachusetts, where you've got an approved list of guns, but if you're law enforcement, you can get them off the unapproved list, and apparently if you're retired, you can still buy off the unapproved list?
I'm not exactly sure, because actually you can't just go in and drop a badge on the counter to buy an off-roster firearm. You do need to have department letterhead. It could be, though, because, again, you've got all these exemptions and all that. You could technically go into the chief's office just on the weekend saying, hey, chief, how's it going and all that? Or even, hi, new chief. I'm a guy that retired, you know, 10 years ago, but I just thought I'd say hi. Can I get a requisition letter? There's a new gun I want to buy. That mm-hmm. might happen for all. But yeah, he's got to have guns. And so it's one of those, like, he's telling, again, put it behind the tuna and all this. It's just, oh my God. Like absolutely, not only is it like terrible advice and tone deaf advice, but it's insanely dangerous advice to just like, yeah, oh, you've got a gun. Yeah, pay it no mind. Yeah, that's exactly what you need to do with a firearm. But yeah, you know, he's got guns and, you know, I'm sure he carries them and all that stuff. And he's got the high capacity magazines. He's probably got all the evil guns that he's looking to ban, but he doesn't want you to have guns because you're not well trained, and he doesn't want you to get trained because training would imply that you're supposed to pay mine to guns.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. And they might be useful. Again, the whole like victims of domestic violence defending their lives. We can't talk about that because that's one of those defensive gun uses that they don't think exists.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, abstinence only education. Let's rub their nose in it. Thanks to each and every one of our listeners, and a very special thanks to all our supporters on Patreon. To become a Patreon patron, go to patreon.com/assortedcalibers podcast to sign up. Patrons get an early release of the podcast, plus bonus content like the hilarious blooper reels, the ACP film tracks, and the ACP mag dump.
Also, please remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts, subscribe to us on the platform of your choice, and share the show with your friends, both online and off.
You can get more from me at my blog, which is weirdworld.com. That's weerdworld.com. And hear me weekly on Handgun Radio on Firearms Radio Network.
Yeah, you know where you can find out more about me. But hey, one thing that's been going on is that I figured out how to use MailChimp. And so past couple of weeks, I've been sending out mailers to people on the Operation Blazing Sword mailing list. And so if you would like to be kept in the loop and want to receive emails from us, then you need to go to our website. That's blazingsword.org. And oh, I don't remember what page it's on, and I don't want to look it up right now, but it should be easy to find there on the webpage, and you can sign up and get our newsletter. And so that way you can hear all the cool things we're doing, and hopefully I won't run out of steam, like, after a month. Because I've got about 2 more weeks of stuff, and then I'm out. But hopefully the quarantine will have been good for this particular aspect of Blazing Sword. Thanks to Nate Spencer for our music.
Oh, yeah, thanks to Nate Spencer for our music.
He doesn't remember the thing that he says for 100 episodes, and I have to come in and take over, and I call it stealing the dick. Our memory and our... You know what? I'm going to go with our competence is assorted, and so is our podcast. Good night, everypony.
Shots fired. Good night.